Osho, Tao, The Pathless Path, Volume 1. Talks on extracts from the Lita Zoo, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 3.
Bhagwan, when Confucius was roaming on Mount Tai, he saw Jung Chi Chi walking on the moors of Qing in a rough fur coat with a rope round his waist, singing as he strummed a lute. Master, what is the reason for your joy? Asked Confucius. I have many joys. Of the myriad things which heaven begot, mankind is the most noble, and I have the luck to be human. This is my first joy. People are born who do not live a day or a month, who never get out of their swaddling clothes. But I have already lived to 90. This is my joy. For all men, poverty is the norm and death is the end. Abiding by the norm, awaiting my end, what is there to be concerned about? Good, said Confucius. Here is a man who knows how to console himself.
This is a beautiful parable, and not only beautiful, but very subtle. If you look only on the surface, you will miss the meaning. Taoist parables are not on the surface. They are very deep, and they have to be penetrated and looked and meditated upon. Then only you will know the real meaning. This parable on the surface seems as if is in favor of Confucius. On the surface it seems that the parable is saying that Confucius is wise. The reality is just the opposite. There is a great diametrical opposition between Tao attitude and the Confucian attitude. Confucius is as far away from Tao vision as it is possible. Confucius believes in law. Confucius believes in tradition. Confucius believes in discipline. Confucius believes in character, morality, culture, society, education. Tao believes in spontaneity, individuality, freedom. Tao is rebellious. Confucius is very conformist. Taoism is the profoundest non-conformism that has ever been evolved anywhere in the world, any time in history. Essentially, it is rebellion. So there has been a rivalry. And Taoist mystics are Lao Tzu, Chuang Tzu, and Li Tzu. They go on ridiculing the Confucian attitude. This is a parable of ridicule. You will understand it when I will explain it to you. Their ridicule is also very subtle, not gross. First, let us understand the surface meaning. When Confucius was roaming on Mount Tai, he saw Jung Chi Chi walking on the moors of Cheng in a rough fur coat with a rope around his waist, singing as he strummed a lute. Singing, music, dancing is the language of joy, of happiness. It is an expression that the person is not miserable, but it may be just an appearance. It may be just projected. It may be just cultivated. Deep down, the situation may be just the opposite. Sometimes it happens, you laugh because you don't want to cry. Sometimes it happens, you smile because tears are coming. If you don't smile, they will start rolling down on your cheeks. Sometimes you maintain an attitude, a cultivated face, a mask that you are happy. Because what is the point of showing your unhappiness to the world? That's why people look so happy. Everybody thinks he is the unhappiest person in the world because he knows his reality and he knows only the faces of others, cultivated faces. So everybody deep down thinks that I am the most miserable person. And why I am the most miserable person when everybody is so happy? Singing, dancing is certainly a language of joy. But you can learn a language without knowing what joy is. That's what humanity has done. People have learned gestures, empty gestures. But Confucius is deceived. He says, Master, what is the reason for your joy? Ask Confucius. The mask has deceived Confucius. The man may be joyful, may not be joyful. The man has to be directly looked into his nature, not through his expression. The expression can be false. People have learned expressions. Sometimes do you watch? Somebody is smiling. On the lips there is a beautiful smile. And look into the eyes. And the eyes say something just the opposite. Somebody says something to you, I love you. And look at the face and at the eyes and the very vibe of the person. And it seems that he hates you. But just to be polite, he is saying, I love you. Confucius looked only at the appearance. That is the first thing to be remembered. And he was deceived so much that he called the man master. He says, Master, what is the reason for your joy? Now again, joy has no reason. Joy cannot have a reason to it. If joy has any reason, it is not a joy at all. Joy can only be without any reason, uncaused. A disease has a reason, but health is natural. If you go and ask the doctor why I am healthy, he cannot answer you. If you go to the doctor and you say, why I am ill, he can answer you. Because illness has a cause. He can diagnose your case. And he can find the reason why you are ill. But nobody has been yet able to find a reason why a man is healthy. Health is natural. Health is as it should be. Illness is as it should not be. Illness means something has gone wrong. When everything is going good, one is healthy. When everything is in tune, one is healthy. When one is with the whole, harmonious, one is healthy. There is no reason for it. But Confucius asked, Master, what is the reason for your joy? Again, Lihitazu is joking about Confucius. That's how they are very subtle people. He's saying, in the very question, the whole Confucian wrong attitude is there. Confucius thinks there are reasons for joy. There cannot be any reasons for joy. Joy simply is. Unexplained, unexplainable. When it is, when it is not, it is not. When it is not, you can find the reasons why it is not. But when it is, you cannot find any reasons why it is. And if you can sow the reasons why it is, then your joy is cultivated, not real, not true, not authentic. It is not flowing from your innermost core. It is just you are managing it. You are manipulating it. You are pretending it. When a joy is a pretended joy, you can find out the reason. But when the joy is truly there, it is so mysterious. It is so primal that you cannot find any reason in it. If you ask a Buddha why you are happy, he will shrug his shoulders. If you ask Lao Tzu why you are blissful, he will say, don't ask it. Rather than asking why I am blissful, you inquire why you are not. It is like a small spring in the mountains. When there is no hindrance, the spring flows. When there are rocks on the way, it cannot flow. When the rocks are removed, you don't create the spring. You only remove the negative. You only remove the obstacle. Spring was there because of the rock. It was not able to flow. When you remove the rock, you are not creating the spring. Spring was already there. By removing the rock, you have removed the negative, the obstacle, and spring flows. Now if somebody asks why the spring flows, because the spring is there. That's why it flows. If it was not flowing, then there was a cause to it. Let this sink deep in you. Because it is your problem too. Never ask why you are happy. Never ask why one is blissful. Otherwise, you have asked the wrong question. Never ask why there is God. If you ask, you have asked the wrong question. And all the answers that can be given are bound to be wrong. Because a wrong question provokes wrong answers. Why God is, that is irrelevant. It is simply the case. Confucius is asking something. And by asking that, he is sowing his presuppositions. Confucius believes that everything has a cause. If everything has a cause, then only science can exist. Then there is no possibility for religion. Because science is the inquiry into the cause and effect relationship. Inquiry into causation. Inquiry into causality. That's the whole scientific attitude. They say if something is there, there must be a cause to it. You may know, you may not know, but the cause is bound to be there. If we don't know today, we will know tomorrow or day after tomorrow. But the cause is bound to be known, because the cause must be there. This is the scientific attitude. Everything can be reduced to its cause. And what is the religious attitude? Religion says nothing can be reduced really to its cause. That which can be reduced is not essential. The essential simply is, it exists without any cause. It is mysterious. This is the meaning of mystery. There is no cause to it. Confucius is asking a question according to his presuppositions, according to his philosophy. Master, what is the reason for your joy? Why, he is asking, so that if the reason is known, others can also cultivate. If somebody says, by standing on my head, I become very peaceful. So you can stand on your head and you can become peaceful. Somebody says, I am happy because I have renounced the world. So you renounce the world and you become happy. Then happiness becomes something that can be manipulated. This is how people are imitating each other. And in fact, there is no cause for happiness. The day you understand this, you can be happy any moment. If there is a cause, then the cause will take time. You will have to practice it. You will have to practice long. And the whole radical attitude of Tao is that you can be happy this moment. What does this mean? This means that there is no cause, so there is no need to practice. It is just a question of allowing it. It is already there. If you allow, if you don't allow, you function like a rock. If you allow, the rock is removed. It is only a question of allowing it. God is there, you allow, that's all. If you don't allow, he will not enter, because he cannot destroy your freedom. He protects your freedom. If you say no, he is not going to enter into your being. If on your door it is written that nobody is allowed without permission, he will wait. He is not even going to ask your permission, he will simply wait. Because even to ask your permission is to interfere with your freedom. He will wait, he will not ring the bell. He will simply wait. God is everywhere waiting. And he waits so silently, that's why his presence is not felt. He looks almost absent. Can't you see it? God seems to be the most absent thing in the world. That's why atheists can exist and they can say, where is your God? We don't see. He's so non-interfering. He allows you total freedom. And total freedom implies in it to go against God. Your nature is that of bliss. You are made of the stuff called bliss. But you have to allow it. You have to relax. You have to be in a let go. No cause is there, just let go is needed. Hence, theoretically, it can happen this very moment. Not even a split second has to be wasted. If there is a cause, then long time will be needed. And even then, one never knows. You may succeed, you may not succeed. See the difference between the Hindu attitude and the Taoist attitude. The Hindu, the Jaina, the Buddhist attitude, they all say, past lives, karma, has to be removed. much has to be done. Great discipline is needed. Only then you will be able to attain. Ashtavakra, Lao Tzu, Bodhidharma, Linchi, they say nothing is needed. Just allow it. Relax, allow it, and this very moment it will start pouring in you. Confucius says, Master, what is the reason for your joy? Tell me how you have attained it. Tell me what was your process. What methodology you followed. What principles. What disciplines. What scriptures. How you have attained it. Now Confucius is greedy. He wants to attain to the same state where song is natural. And music flows, and one is celebrating. He is tremendously enchanted by this man because he is in a rough fur coat with a rope around his waist, singing as he strummed a lute. A poor man has nothing to be happy for, has nothing to be happy about. If he was miserable, it was understandable. If he was depressed, it was understandable. Confucius would have passed him, not even noticing his existence. But this poor man who has nothing, a rope around his waist, singing a song of joy, strumming a lute, Confucius is enchanted, magnetized. But he asks a wrong question. A Taoist will never ask such a question. Joy is and simply is and has no cause to it. Hence, no methods are possible, only understanding. That man said, I have many joys. If you have many joys, you have not understood what joy is, because joy is only one. There cannot be many joys. There can be many diseases, but there cannot be many healths. You may have your disease, I may have mine. Somebody else has his own. But when I am healthy, you are healthy, somebody else is healthy, what is the difference? Can you make a distinction between my health and your health? Then there is no possibility. Health is universal. Disease is personal. Disease is of the ego. Health is not of the ego. Disease is of the body, of the mind. Health is of the beyond, and the beyond is one. My body differs from yours. Naturally, I will have a different disease, you will have a different disease. But health is simply one. It has the taste, the same taste, always, eternally the same. Somebody asked Buddha, what is the taste of your Buddhahood? He said, go and taste the sea and taste it from anywhere, from any bank, from any beach. From the bank or go to the middle of the ocean and taste it there or to the other source and you will find the taste always the same salty taste. Buddha who has one taste. Whosoever has become a Buddha has come to the same taste. Health has the same taste. When the child is healthy, the young man is healthy and the old man is healthy, then too it has the same taste. When the woman is healthy and the man is healthy, the same taste. But diseases are different. Now, medical science says that even when two persons are suffering from the same disease, even then the two diseases are not the same. Hence, sometimes it happens you are suffering from the same disease, maybe tuberculosis, and your wife is suffering from the same disease, tuberculosis, but the same medicines don't work. You need some other medicine, your wife needs some other medicine. That's why the physician is needed. Otherwise, the chemist would be enough. If once it is decided tuberculosis need this medicine, then what is the point to go to the physician? The chemist can supply it. Now, more and more, as medical science is going deeper into the phenomenon of health and disease, they are becoming aware that each disease has a personality in it. It belongs to the person. So now they say, don't treat the disease, treat the person. Don't be too much concerned with the disease. Look into the person, his total personality, his way of life, his attitudes, his habit patterns. Look into them, and then you will find that the name TB may be the same, because it will be very difficult to have separate names for everybody. But each person who suffers from tuberculosis suffers differently, and a different treatment is needed. Diseases are personal, but health is impersonal, universal. So is joy. Misery is a disease, joy is health, well-being. Now, Confucius has asked the wrong question and provoked the wrong answer. And of course, the man does not know anything about joy. He says, I have many joys. Many? Then something has gone wrong. Joy is one. When you say you have many joys, you don't know what joy is. You may be talking about pleasures. You may be talking about your so-called moments of happiness, which are not really moments of happiness, but only of less misery. A person is very miserable, then one day he feels less miserable and he says, I am very happy. That is just relative. He does not know what happiness is. He knows only sometimes very intense misery, sometimes not so intense. When it is not so intense, he says, I am happy. You can observe it in yourself. Have you ever known what happiness is? Do you know the taste of it? You have known only different stages of misery. Sometimes the misery is so much that it is unbearable. Sometimes it is bearable, within control. You can tolerate it. You move from less misery to more misery, more misery to less misery. But you have not known what happiness is. Because once you have known what happiness is, then there is no need to be miserable at all. Because then you have the key. You can open that door any moment you decide to open it. But you cannot open the door of happiness. That simply shows you don't have the key. Just you know relative states of the same phenomenon. Sometimes it is very dark and you cannot see at all, and sometimes it is not so dark, it is dim. But you have not known what light is. Light is not any a relative state of darkness. Light is not less darkness, remember. Light is a totally different kind of energy. It has nothing to do with darkness. Darkness and light cannot exist together in the same room. Light is a positivity. Darkness is a negativity. So is misery. I have many joys, said the man, of the myriad things which heaven begot. Mankind is the most noble, and I have the luck to be human. This is my first joy. On the surface, looks very meaningful, appealing, because very much fulfilling to the human ego. Man has always been thinking himself as the superior most creation of God. Man has always thought himself only as next to God and feels very happy. But how happiness is possible through the ego? Unhappiness comes through the ego, and this is one of the greatest egoist points, that man is only next to God. That too we say only just to be polite. Deep down you know that God is next to you. The very idea of I has in it an implication of being the first, then everything is secondary. Friedrich Nietzsche is truer than many more people. He says, I cannot allow God to exist because then I am secondary. And I cannot be secondary. I cannot accept my status as secondary. If God is, then I will always be secondary. Howsoever I grow and wherever I reach, I will be secondary. I will never be but the primary, the first. This is not acceptable. So he says God is dead and man is free. God is the bondage, he says. He is true in a way. In a way, I say, because that's how everybody thinks deep down. Every ego wants God to be second. Even when you are a great worshipper, a great so-called religious person, you are trying every moment to manipulate God according to you. Do my will. That's all what your prayer means. Do according to me. Listen to me. Your whole effort is to convert God into your servant. You call him Lord, Master, but those are just briberies. You are trying to manipulate him. You say, I am nobody, you are all. But deep down you know who is who and who. In fact, even when you fight for your God, it is your God. Even when you sacrifice yourself on some pedestal, on some altar, it is your God you sacrifice. When you bow down to an image of God in a temple, in a mosque, in a church, it is your image that you have created. It is your God. You are bowing down in front of your own creation. You are bowing down as if before a mirror. You are reflected there and you say, how beautiful. When a Christian says, how beautiful is Christ. When a Hindu says, how beautiful is Krishna. And when a Buddhist says, how beautiful is Buddha. The Buddhist will not accept that Christ is beautiful because that does not fulfill his ego. The Christian will not accept that Buddha is beautiful. That does not fulfill his ego The Hindu cannot believe that Christ or Muhammad or Moses are beautiful. That does not fulfill his ego. Remember, we are fulfilling our egos in every way possible, gross or subtle, direct or indirect. And a religious person is one who knows this, becomes aware of this, and in that awareness the ego disappears. A religious person has no idea who is superior. A religious person cannot say, I am superior to the tree, I am superior to the animal, I am superior to the bird. A religious person cannot say, I am superior. A religious person has come to know that I am not. And in that experience of I am not, joy flows in. The rock has been removed. Now this man says, I have many joys. Of the myriad things which heaven begot, mankind is the most noble. Why? Why mankind is the most noble? If you look at human history, mankind seems to be the most unnoble. Look at the animals. They have not been so violent, so murderous. They have not been so insane. Have you ever seen any animal turning into a politician? Trying to become a president of a country? They are not insane. They live naturally. They die naturally. Animals in the wild never go mad. Sometimes they go mad when they are forced to live in a zoo. The zoo is a human creation. Animals never commit suicide, but sometimes in the zoo they commit. Animals never turn homosexual in the natural wild state, but in the zoo they turn. In the zoo they become murderous, dangerous. Yes, they kill, but they kill only when they want to eat. Man kills for no reason. A man goes to the wild and kills a tiger and he says, this is play, this is game. I was hunting. Have you ever heard any lion hunting? They never hunt. When a lion is hungry, of course he kills, and that's a natural way for him. I have heard once a lion and a fox entered a restaurant. Maybe Vrindavan. They took seats and the fox ordered. But the fox ordered only for one. So the waiter asked, and what about your friend? And the fox said, what do you think? If he was hungry, should I be sitting here? He is not hungry, that is certain. When animals are hungry, they kill. But they don't kill as game. They don't kill for fun. They are not interested in killing in itself. Of course, they are interested in food. Nothing is wrong in it. Man kills for no reason. Animals don't kill for ideologies. They don't say that I am a communist and you are a capitalist, I will kill you. They don't say that I am a fascist and you are a communist, so I will kill you. They don't have any ideologies, and they don't kill because they are Christians, Hindus and Mohammedans. Man kills for any excuse, for any excuse whatsoever. Hindus can kill Mohammedans, Mohammedans can kill Hindus, Christians can kill Mohammedans and Buddhists, and so on and so forth. And for what? For abstract doctrines, principles. And nobody is ready to live for those doctrines. And everybody is ready to kill other for those same doctrines. If somebody insults the Bible, the Christian is ready to kill you. And if you ask him, are you living your Bible? He said, it is very difficult. He is not interested in living. Nobody is interested in living. But if it comes to killing, then everybody becomes very much interested. Down the centuries, in 3,000 years, there have been 5,000 wars. No. No animal is so unnoble. Animals have a natural nobility. Man is very cunning. But the man said, mankind is the most noble. And I have the luck to be human. This is my first joy. This is not joy. This is the pleasure that comes by feeling egoistic, that I am somebody. And remember, this cannot lead you to real happiness, because deep down there is comparison. If you are feeling superior, any moment you can feel inferior. Once I heard a religious man, a saint, a very well-known saint in India, teaching to his disciples that always look to people who don't have as much as you have, and you will feel very happy. If you have a house, always look to people who don't have a house, naturally, you feel happy. If you have only one eye, look at the person who is blind, you feel happy. What type of happiness is this? And what type of religion is this? And naturally, you cannot throw the other aspect of the coin. You have one eye, when you look at the blind person, you feel happy, but when you will come across a man who has two beautiful eyes, then what you will do? You will feel unhappy. In your so-called happiness, unhappiness is implied. No, through comparison, nobody comes to joy. Joy is a non-comparative state. You don't compare. I have heard father took Sunny to see a show which featured 50 of the most naked performers in the country. Fui, 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 father kept muttering all during the performance. What's the matter, Pop? Don't you like the show? Sonny asked. Sure I do, he replied. I was thinking of your mother. If you are comparing, your comparison is going to create trouble. Remember, joy is not out of comparison. Never. But this man said, I have many joys of the myriad things which heaven begot. Mankind is the most noble, and I have the luck to be human. This is my first joy. This is not much of a joy. It is just a titillation of the ego. You feel good, you feel superior. But a person who needs to feel good to be superior is a person who is carrying a volcano within him. A person who has to be superior to feel happy is deep down suffering from inferiority complex. Only an inferior person thinks in terms of superiority. A real person, an authentic person, is neither superior nor inferior. He simply is unique. Nobody is lower than him and nobody is higher than him. The whole existence is equal. The trees and the rocks and the animals and the birds and man and women and God all are sharing the whole existence on equal terms. The moment you see this tremendous equality, this oneness, you are joyful. And then your joy has no cause. It is uncaused. People are born who do not live a day or a month, who never get out of their swaddling clothes, but I have already lived to 90. This is my joy. Comparing. Somebody was born and died. Somebody was young and died. And this man is comparing that I am 90 years of age. I have lived my life. So what is there to be miserable? I am happy. I have lived more than others. But if those others had not died then, if you were alone in the world then, will this man be happy? Just think, the whole world disappears. Only this man is left. There are no animals, no birds, no rocks. He cannot compare himself and he cannot call himself the superior man. There are not young people dying, children dying. He cannot compare himself that he has lived 90 years of age. If he is left alone, will he be happy? All his happiness will disappear because it was coming from comparisons. Tao says, if you are alone, absolutely alone, and your happiness still remains the same, then you have attained. Otherwise, you have not attained. A comparative happiness is a pseudo-happiness. I have a big car and you don't have. Because you don't have, I am happy. This is something foolish. How I can be happy because you don't have a car? What it has to do with my happiness that you don't have a car? I have a big house and you don't have a big house, so I am happy. This happiness seems more interested in making others unhappy rather than being oneself happy. You don't have a car, you don't have a good house. I am happy because you are miserable. Look at the logic of it. The mathematics is simple. I am happy when people are miserable. So if people are more miserable, I will be more happy. If the whole world is turned into hell, I will be supremely happy. This is the logic. And this is what man has been doing. In Calcutta, I used to stay in a house, the most beautiful house in Calcutta. And the man was really in mad love with his house. It was a marble mansion. Really beautiful, built with taste, with very aristocratic taste. And in Calcutta, to have 10 acres of garden in the middle of Calcutta was something impossible. And he had it. And he was really in deep love with it. And whenever I was staying with him, he will take me to the swimming pool, to the garden, to the lawn. He will show me this and that and what improvements he has made since I have been there last. But the last time I went, he was very miserable. I said, what is the matter? And you have not taken me anywhere. Have you not done anything new? He said, my interest is gone. Can't you see by the side? The neighbor has made a better house. And unless I can make a bigger house than this, I will remain unhappy. Now, this man has the same house, but his happiness has disappeared. What your happiness has to do with the neighbor? If he has made a bigger house, how does it concern you? And your house remains the same, and you are no more happy. Then certainly, I told him, then one thing is certain, that it was not your house that you were happy with. You were happy because of the neighbor's poor house. Watch, always watch. This is violence, to be happy when somebody is miserable. This is how people start moving in the wrong direction. Become oppressors, become exploiters, become dangerous. They are a curse on the earth. But their whole logic is the same. What this man is saying that I am happier than others. Look, many people died when they were young, and I am still alive, healthy. And I am 90 years of age. This is my joy. For all men, poverty is the norm, and death is the end. Abiding by the norm, awaiting my end, what is there to be concerned about? Now he says, almost all the men are poor. So that is the norm, to be poor. And naturally everybody is going to die. So I am going to die. I am poor, I am going to die, everybody is going to die, everybody else is poor. So why be miserable? That's why I am happy. This is not happiness. Good, said Confucius. Confucius was very much impressed. He said, good. Here is a man who knows how to console himself. But in this sentence, Lihitazu has played the trick. He says, Confucius was very much impressed. He said, good. Here is a man who knows how to console himself. Because to Confucius, to be satisfied in life is the goal. To have consolation is the goal. To ask for more, Confucius says, is to ask for the impossible. This is all that a man can have. And this man knows the way how to console himself, and he is happy and he is singing. But to the Taoists, consolation is negative. It is not contentment. Contentment has nothing to do with consolation. Contentment is a totally different dimension. Try to understand it. Consolation means somehow rationalizing one's situation. Trying not to be worried. Trying not to be too much concerned, creating buffers around you. That's what Gurdjieff used to call buffers. Everybody creates buffers around himself. So life is not so much shocking. They use buffers in the railway trains, or springs in the cars. So when you are moving on a hilly a road and life is a hilly track. You don't go on bumping. Those springs function as buffers. If the road is rough, the roughness is absorbed by the springs, by the buffers. It does not reach you. So-called philosophies of consolation are buffers. You see, you are poor. A great unhappiness arises in you. Create the buffer. So many people are poor. Millions of people are poor. So why be worried about it? This is how things are. You have created a buffer. You are ill. Misery arises. Go to the hospital. Have a visit there and see people. And you will feel very happy. You have created a buffer. At least you are not so much ill as others are. You have lost one leg. Just go on the street and see a beggar who has lost both the legs. Feel consoled. These are buffers. Look always to those who don't have even that much that you have. That way, a life becomes less shocking. You live more conveniently, more comfortably, and you are not touched. By and by, between you and life, there is such a distance created by the buffers that never anything reaches to you. You live encapsulated into your buffers, philosophies, consolations. Life ends one day. You can console everybody has to die. It is nothing special happening to you. God is not especially unkind to you. To everybody it happens. Or you can start believing in the theory of reincarnation, that you will be born and the soul is eternal. Again, a buffer. Or you can think that it is only the body that dies. And what is body? Nothing but bones, marrow, flesh, blood. It is nothing worth. It is useless. A dirty bag. So let it die. But your pure soul is going to be forever and ever. A buffer is created. These buffers don't allow you to see what reality is. This is the way to console. But Confucius believes that consolation is the end. If a man can console himself, he has known the art of life. That's what Confucius thinks, that the whole art of life is how to live in this miserable world in a comparative ease, comparatively not too much burdened. Yes, there is misery, but one can protect oneself from misery by creating conceptions, rationalizations. And humanity has been moving from one rationalization to another, but always it finds a new rationalization. For example, in the East, this rationalization is very ancient. If you are miserable, they say you must have done something wrong in the past life. Something wrong has gone into your past. You have done some wrong karma, hence you are miserable. Now it makes things explained. So one has to suffer. You have sown, now you are reaping. I have heard about a man who was a very good tailor. He was caught stealing and he was sentenced for 2 years in jail. The mayor of the town went to see him because that was the best tailor in the town and the whole town was suffering his absence. And the mayor was also a lover of the tailor. When he went to see him in the jail, he was doing some needlework, sewing something. The old habit, and what else to do? So the mayor asked, "So I see you are sewing something," and the tailor said, "No, sir, reaping." The whole philosophy of karma is that you have sown already, now you are reaping. You have done, so it is a natural consequence. It consoles. So nobody is doing anything unjust to you. God is not unjust, fate is not unjust, the world is not unjust, the society is not unjust. It is your own karma. So what to do? One has to pass through it. And one has to keep one's equanimity, one's equilibrium. And don't do such a thing again, otherwise next life you will suffer again. So the only thing that can be done is, you cannot change the past, but you can still manage the future. A beautiful consolation. It has helped the East to remain poor, miserable. It has helped the East to remain ugly, ill, unhygienic. It has helped the East to console itself. And that consolation has turned into a tremendous lethargy. There is nothing you can do. You have to tolerate. All that is needed is beware of the future. So, past has to be accepted and future has to be feared. That's all. But even in poverty, in misery, East seems to be more happy than the West. Why? East has a beautiful buffer, a strong buffer to protect itself. Now, each society has to create these consolations in different ways. Now in the West, psychoanalysis is one of the most consoling processes. You go to the psychoanalyst and he throws the whole responsibility on your mother. You feel unburdened. You say, "So what can I do?" You cannot change your mother, the same as you cannot change your past. Your mother is your past. Well, what can you do? Next time, keep a little more alert. Don't enter in anybody's womb. That's all. This has happened. You were born to such and such a mother, and she has spoiled your life. One feels good. So you are not responsible. It is just a calamity that has happened. And whatsoever has happened, has happened. Accept it. Long years of psychoanalysis, and they simply prepare you to accept. They simply make you alert that things have been this way, nothing can be done. All their explanations are rationalizations. And they find everything. Whatsoever you ask, they have answers for it. If you smoke, they have answers why you smoke. Your mother must have taken away the breast sooner than you wanted. Hence, you are smoking. So you are not responsible. What to do? Your mother took away the breast. Now, the cigar is a substitute breast. And it is a little. They find very clever explanations. It seems a little because from the breast flows warm milk and from the cigarette flows the warm smoke. And there is a certain similarity. And you hold the cigar in the same way you hold a breast in your mouth. But when it comes to themselves, then it is troublesome. It is said Freud used to explain everything through sex. Whatsoever you do, he will find a sexual explanation. If in your dream you are climbing a mountain, it is sexual. You are climbing a woman. If in your dream you are driving fast, it is nothing, it is sexual. You want to penetrate a woman fast. Every explanation he will find through sex, as in the East every explanation was found through the soul and became a very consolating process. Freud thinks everything through sex. But sometimes he was in a difficulty. He himself was a chain smoker. So he had to say, once somebody asked him, what is the meaning of your cigar smoking? He said, sometimes a cigar may be just a cigar and nothing but a cigar. Of course, the disciple was not satisfied. And the disciple said to other disciples, that simply shows that it is a rationalization on the part of Sigmund Freud for his cigar smoking. He wants to protect himself. Now, it will be too much to think that he has some complex behind this smoking. Everybody has the complex. So everybody has to give in this consolation that because of this complex, but Freud should not have this complex. Otherwise that will become a disturbing thing to himself, that I am the greatest psychoanalyst, the greatest psychoanalyst ever, the founder of psychoanalysis, and I am smoking and I know what it is. So he says, a cigar sometimes is a cigar. This way of explaining things has become very prevalent in the West. It is almost taken a very epidemic proportion. Psychoanalysis is always trying the why of everything, as if by knowing the why, anything is solved. Why you are miserable? Go to the psychoanalyst. He will find an answer for it. Why? Your father was such, your mother was such, your childhood was such. That's why. And you come happy. You come happy because now you have the rationalization. I have heard the smartest psychiatric joke ever. Listen, it is very small. Be careful. A man asked another man, are you a psychiatrist? And the other man said, why do you ask? And the man said, so you are a psychiatrist. Why? A continuous why, as if why is going to explain anything. It simply postpones. It pushes the same problem a little farther back. But again, the why can be asked. Hindus say, you did something wrong in the past life. Ask why. Then they have to go to another past life. Then ask why. And then the Mahatma will become very angry. And he will say, stop. You are going beyond. These are things to be experienced, not asked. What is the point of saying that I have done something wrong in the past life? Why? Then something else in another life. Then why? Why I did the wrong thing in my first life? It is useless. But as in the East, Religion became a consolation, so it is happening in the West. Psychoanalysis is becoming a consolation. Psychoanalysis is almost an obsessive compulsion to analyze each and everything and to find out the cause of it. Particularly in America, it has become almost a collective neurosis. Everybody is going to the psychoanalyst or the psychiatrist. Anybody who can afford is going. Those who are not going to the psychiatrist, they are poor people. They cannot afford. When women meet in their clubs, they talk about their psychiatrist, what he has said, how profound is his analysis. And everything is reduced to the lowest denominator. If you ask the psychoanalyst, what is the cause of this lotus? He will say, the mud. If you have spiritual experiences, what is the cause? He will go to the sex, the mud, the lowest denominator. But things, in a way, help. If you find that all these Mahatmas who are experiencing Sahasrar are experiencing nothing but sexuality, sublimated sexuality, you are at ease. So you don't need to worry about it. You don't need in search for it. This is just sublimated sexuality. So you are okay wherever you are. If Buddha attained to bliss, it is nothing but a sexual fantasy. So nothing wrong. You can go on reading your Playboy and enjoy your sexual fantasy, because Buddha's experience was also nothing but sublimated sexual fantasy, consolations. I have heard a Second World War story about a priest who repeatedly preached to the troops about predestination. The priest told the soldiers not to worry about their future or fate on the battlefield, because if they were predestined to be killed, a bullet will find its mark no matter where they were. Or on the other hand, if they were to be spared, no bullet would hit them. Sometime later, in the heat of battle, with bullets spraying around him, the priest hot-footed it to the nearest and biggest tree. A soldier was behind it. He inquired of the priest about his predestination sermons and why he should be seeking shelter now. "You do not fully understand the principles and theories of predestination," the priest replied. "I was predestined to run and hide behind this tree." Explanations and explanations, clever consolations, places to hide. Life has to be faced. It is rough. There is much pain, but the pain has to be faced. There is misery. It has to be encountered. It has to be passed through. Without any explanations and without any consolations, if you can live your life without any theorization about it, direct, immediate, moment to moment, one day you will come to that source of joy, which is not a consolation, which is a contentment. And what is the difference? A contentment is a positive state of your being. A consolation is just negative. I have one eye, others don't have even one, I feel consolated. I am miserable, others are even more miserable, I am consolated. I am young, others are old, I am consolated. I am old, others have died young, I am consolated. Consolations and consolations, but all empty. Confucius believes in consolations. Li Tzu believes in contentment. And difference has to be remembered. Contentment comes only when you are not comparing. When you are simply within yourself. Totally in yourself, centered, rooted. And by being in your being, you suddenly realize that the whole is yours and you are of the whole. You are not separate. The ego has disappeared. You have become universal. In that moment, there is great contentment, great benediction. But that benediction, that contentment, does not come through rationalization. It comes through realization. That is the difference. Consolation is a rationalization. Contentment is a realization. So there are three states of mind: discontentment, a state of comparison. Comparing with those who have more than you. Then there is discontent. Somebody has a beautiful car and you are walking on foot. You are a pedestrian. Then you are discontented. Second stage is contentment. You are a pedestrian and you see a beggar who has no feet. Comparing with that one who has less than you. But it's still comparison. Discontent, one aspect of the coin. Contentment, the so-called contentment, another aspect of the same coin. And the name of the coin is comparison. When you have thrown the coin completely, contentment and discontentment all, then suddenly you are in a state of no comparison. That is real contentment. Then you don't compare who has more, who has less. In fact, then it is not a question of having, then it is a question of being. Having never helps. I was reading the other night strange aesthetics. Bill Bright records in his beautiful book Jesus and the Intellectual. In 1923, a very important meeting was held at the Edgewater Beach Hotel in Chicago. Attending this meeting were 9 of the world's most successful financiers: Charles Schwab, president of the largest independent steel company; Samuel Insull, president of the largest utility company; Howard Hobson, president of the largest gas company; Arthur Carton, the greatest wheat speculator; Richard Whitney, president of the New York Stock Exchange; Albert Fall, a member of the president's cabinet; Leon Fraser, president of the Bank of International Settlements; Jess Livermore, the greatest bear on the Wall Street; and Ivor Kruger, head of the greatest monopoly. 25 years later, Charles Schwab had died in bankruptcy, having lived on borrowed money for 5 years before his death. Samuel Insull had died a fugitive from justice and penniless in a foreign land. Howard Hobson was insane. Arthur Carton had died abroad, insolvent. Richard Whitney had spent time in Sing Sing. Albert Fall had been pardoned so that he could die at home. Jess Livermore, Ivor Kruger, and Leon Fraser had all died by suicide. All of these men had learned well the art of making a living, but none of them had learned how to live. You can have as much as you desire, but by having, nobody ever attains to life. Life comes only through being, not through having. Now there are three types of people: those who have the worldly, those who renounce the otherworldly. The first and the second are not opposite to each other, howsoever opposite they appear. One believes by having more, You will attain to happiness. Another believes by not having more you will attain to happiness. But both believe in having. The third, the totally different dimension is of being, neither having nor not having. That's what I mean by sannyas. Don't be worldly, don't be otherworldly. Don't compare with those who have more, don't compare with those who have less. Compare not. Just be yourself. Allow your being. Be, and that being will bring tremendous joy. And that joy will be one, not many. And that joy will not have any cause to it. It will be uncaused. It will be just like well-being, health. I have heard, once there was a man, alone and miserable. He prayed to God and said, "My Lord, send me a beautiful woman. I am very alone. I need company." God laughed and said, "Why not a cross?" The man was very angry and said, "Cross? For what? Do I want to commit suicide? I want only a beautiful woman." So he got a beautiful woman, but soon he became even more miserable than before. The woman was a constant pain in the neck. He prayed again and said, "My Lord, send me a sword." He was planning to kill the woman and be free from her. He was longing to have the good old days again. But again God laughed and said, "What about the cross? Should I send it now?" The man was in a rage and said, "Don't you think that this woman was enough of a cross? Please just send me a sword." So the sword came. He killed the woman and was caught and ordered to be crucified. He prayed to God and laughed loudly and said, "Forgive me, my Lord, I didn't listen to you, otherwise you were asking to send this cross from the very beginning. Had I listened to you, I would have saved myself from so many unnecessary troubles." The world, the other world, the householder's life and the monk's life, so many troubles. If you listen to Tao, then the message is very simple. Be rooted in your being and you will be saved from all the troubles. All the troubles that having brings and all the troubles that not having brings. You just be. Being is the goal of Tao. And one thing more to be understood. Being you already are. There is no becoming. You are not to become. It is already the case. You have it within you. Just it has to be allowed to open. So the perfume is released to the winds. And that is the real song, the joy. The man was singing, but the song was just a pretension. It came out of consolation. It was not a true song. The man was playing on an instrument, but it was not true music, because the true music comes only when you are deeply rooted in yourself. Then you become the instrument and God plays on it. Remember, if you are searching consolation, you will find it, but it is a false coin. Comfortable, convenient, it is like a drug. You remain miserable and you start drinking. The misery does not change, but through drinking you start forgetting about it. Consolation is a sort of intoxication, and nothing is changed because the door to misery remains open. You still go on comparing. Comparison is the root cause of misery. To be non-comparative, to be neither higher nor lower, just to be yourself, not to think in relationship with others, just to think in terms of your tremendous aloneness, then you are happy. I have heard she had one of those one in a million figures, luscious, well developed, neat with the perfect contour, but despite all these gifts she developed a neurosis about peeping toms. What measure do you take to avoid this calamity? Asked her psychiatrist. Well, I keep the shades down, I bar the windows, and I always undress behind a screen. How do you keep the boys from peeking through the keyhole? I leave the door open. Certainly, when you leave the door open, nobody can peep through the keyhole. But the door is open, so what is the point? Consolation is like that. The door remains open because consolation depends on comparison. And misery also depends on comparison. So door is open. But you become more and more intoxicated with consolation, more and more suffocated by your own theorizations, rationalizations, more and more insulated, hiding behind your buffers, you miss life. Drop comparing. Now, this parable read ordinarily will give you an impression that Li Tazu is not saying anything against Confucius. That is their way of saying things. They are very subtle people. He has not uttered a single word against Confucius. And he has demolished the whole Confucian philosophy. So when you are reading these parables, they are not simple parables. Simple they are in a way, but they are very profound. You have to dive deep. You have to dig. You have to go in them. And you have to know the difference between discipline and spontaneity. Whenever anything is of discipline, Tao is against it. Whenever anything is of spontaneity, Tao is for it. Tao is spontaneity. Tao is suchness. Tao is tremendous acceptance of whatsoever is. And in that acceptance, one flowers. Enough for today.